2013 session of the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources. We're in session. Good morning to everyone. We have first an announcement. I'm going to be carrying over House Bill 2427, that's the canola bill, until Tuesday. We need a tweak on the amendment that we have, and that should be ready for us to work that bill, as I say, on Tuesday. So anyone that's here for that, apologize. And with that, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3358, and welcome Representative McLean to our committee. Good morning.
Chair Witt, this is an honor to come and talk about House Bill 3358. I am Mike McLean. I'm the House representative of District 55. A significant portion of my district is within the Deschutes Basin. And House Bill 3358 was pre-session filed and represented the thinking of the interest in Crook, Deschutes, and Jefferson counties back in late summer of 2012. That thinking has evolved, and the goal and mechanisms have changed, but this bill may be a vehicle for enacting a matching grant program for the region to secure a Federal Bureau of Reclamation Water Smart Grant, which would be a tremendous boost for Oregon as well as my district. As you may know, Deschutes Basin is one of the state's best-kept secrets. Advocates, irrigation districts, cities, farmers, and others have worked collaboratively over the past 12 years to pass a series of legislative provisions that have created a water conservation and mitigation system that is unique in the state. By allowing surface-to-groundwater transfers, temporary leasing of in-stream rights, conservation projects along irrigation canals, in-conduit hydro, and other cutting-edge techniques, our region has seen a 400% increase in flows in the Middle Deschutes River. That's a remarkable achievement. The legislature passed bills on a bipartisan basis in 1995, 2001, 2005, and 2011 that were introduced by the Central Oregon Cities Organization to codify this system. And the effort in the current request for matching funding is supported by the governor's office this year as well. More needs to be done. Several years ago, the federal government, Portland General Electric, and the Warm Springs Tribe reached agreement on a program to restore listed salmon above the Pelton Brown Butte project. This requires a far more expansive view of the basin and will require coordination with the Federal Bureau of Reclamation, which controls operations at the two major upstream storage basins at Crane Prairie and Wickiup Reservoirs, not to mention the Prineville Reservoir. Irrigation districts, cities, the numerous members of the Deschutes Water Alliance, and others have joined together to put a comprehensive 50-year plan that will protect flow, allocate existing water for critical agriculture and municipal use, and balance the needs of growth and the environment. This study would be conducted under the auspices of the federal BOR, which has both the resources and the expertise to complete the task. So rather than the $5 million outlined in the version of House Bill 3358 that you have in front of you, we will only be asking for a matching amount of $750,000. The governor's office, the Water Resources Department, and many other key water stakeholders have been exploring a water supply development bill, which is Senate Bill 839. Our Deschutes provision may or may not fit into that bill. We should know within a few days. In the meantime, this legislation here today needs to be preserved as a vehicle for the Deschutes plan, and I hope you will work with us to make sure that we can get this done for Oregon's economy and environment. You're going to hear, Mr. Chair, from some other witnesses, and specifically a letter that's going to be submitted by Alan Unger, who is a Deschutes County Commissioner and Chair of the Deschutes Water Alliance. And on the letterhead, there will be listing members of the Deschutes Water Alliance, which begins with, at the top, Confederate Tribes of Warm Springs and goes all the way down to Deschutes River Conservancy. And if you look there, it's got an impressive group of folks from all different interests who are in agreement that the mitigation effort should be continued. And I'd be happy to answer any questions and certainly, or at least artfully dodge them and let Doug Riggs answer.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments for our colleague this morning, Representative Krieger?
Well, actually, Mr. Chair, you've covered some of the issues that we were going to question you about, but specifically about the participation of the different types of groups, the collaborative approach, I think is important. And I didn't hear you specific about the agricultural community, but you did come back and talk about conservancy groups and the tribes. Can you go back and refresh my memory as to the agricultural part of it, their participation?
Chairman Witt and Representative Krieger, a part of the Deschutes Water Alliance contains the irrigation districts in Central Oregon and the Deschutes Basin, such as the Central Oregon ID, North Unit ID, Ojico ID, Three Sisters, Swally, Arnold, all irrigation districts. And we have as a witness, I believe you'll hear on the phone, Steve Johnson, who will explain at least more of the agricultural benefit. And I think a lot of the infrastructure improvements are going to be with the irrigation districts.
Yes, Vice Chair Esquivel.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative McLean, in addition to the state matching dollars, was there any extra effort by the local entities to support the study efforts?
Chairman Witt and Representative Esquivel, the specifics of the inputs I think can be answered by Central Oregon City's organizations, representative here today, Doug Riggs, as to what some of the investments are, and I certainly think there has been some worth noting. I know on this particular smart water grant, it is a in fact, I don't want to mispronounce it. I call it the Smart Water Grant, but it's Water Smart Grant. Specific to some federal funding, and so the actual dollars. I'm not sure if it's acceptable and what they have in-kind contributions or not, and it may just be that we have to kick in cash at this point. The prior investments, though, I think have been pretty extensive, but I would defer to Mr. Riggs to maybe elaborate on that if you would like.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Anyone else? Representative McLean, thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Appreciate you bringing this bill forward. Doug, who makes sense now?
With Steve and Patrick, and I can do a cleanup.
All right. Sounds good. We have by phone with us this morning Steve Johnson from the Central Oregon Irrigation District. Steve, can you hear us?
Yes, sir.
All right. Would you like to share with us your thoughts this morning?
Yes, thank you very much, Chair Witt, and members of the committee. The ask, the $750,000, and I had heard the other questions from the fellow committee members, I can possibly address those also. This represents the action plan of projects for the next 20 years for the Deschutes Basin. We've already done a significant amount of work, as Representative McLean had represented, and a lot of what I'm calling the low-hanging fruit has been completed. Individual projects, primarily for stream flow restoration, have been completed. But as members of the committee are aware, with water, there's no new water rights being extended. We're dealing basically with fixed supply. 90% of the water rights in the Deschutes Basin are associated with the irrigation districts. So the competition of demand from the growing municipalities, as well as recognizing the responsibility to restore the stream flows to environmentally healthy levels. It's getting complex now where we have multiple stakeholders, multiple interests, ag, municipal, environment, and we're trying to, on a collaborative basis and voluntary basis, put together our list of projects that will meet the demand needs for the next 20 years in the Deschutes Basin and beyond. So the $750,000 ask is a large component to leverage the Bureau of Reclamation Basin Study Plan. It's approximately, will be between $1.5 and $2 million worth of effort. It basically gets, by leveraging the state dollars, local dollars, and federal dollars to look together, we basically will have an authorized, fully collaborative, embedded consensus plan on our projects and the path of those projects going forward. It satisfies federal feasibility level, which means authorized projects that we can then, after completed, request federal dollars that we'll then leverage with, historically we've been able to leverage with local funds as well as with state funds. So it's the model going forward. Reclamation, their budget has remained, let's say, stable. And President Obama's release of the administration's budget yesterday actually included a slight increase in basin study planning dollars. So it's the combination of a collaborative effort that we've already done in the basin. This is basically our action plan of projects that we need to have completed the environmental assessment on impact, to develop the specific consensus from all the stakeholders in order to be able to go forward. The issues have gotten more complex. We have reintroduced Endangered Species Act listed species that have been reintroduced into the basin. There's going to be another species likely listed under Endangered Species Act that's going to affect the Deschutes Basin as well. It's the Oregon spotted frog, and we have TMDL implementation of the Clean Water Act on the Deschutes and the Crooked scheduled in the near future. So a lot of issues, but a lot of stakeholders together at the table right now, and we want to be able to implement our action plan, and that's what this our request to match for the basin study plan will enable us to do.
Well, thank you very, very much. If you'd stand by here, I'll see if the committee has any questions for you, members. Anyone with anything at this point? Steve, I'm not seeing anything here. You're more than welcome to stay with us as your time allows.
Thank you.
And with that, I'm going to recognize our panel. Good morning. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Patrick Griffiths. I'm the Water Resources Manager for the City of Bend. I'm also a member of the Deschutes Water Alliance, the sidebar that you see on the letterhead that was just distributed. We were founding members of that group back in 2004 when we got our first grant from the Bureau of Reclamation that Steve talked about. I can't tell you how excited we are not only to be here and for you to take our time and testimony today. We appreciate that very much. We also appreciate Representative McLean's interest in the understanding how important water is for our basin moving ahead. There are no new water rights to allocate in the Deschutes without getting into the irrigation district's existing water that was allocated 100 years ago. Groundwater mitigation program you may have heard about in the Deschutes Basin is something that we have to go through to get a new water right for groundwater as well. So think of it as a closed system. To get a water right, you have to work with the existing water rights. There's no new water rights being created. This plan is really a key to that. I will tell you that I spent 2 years on the policy advisory group for the Integrated Water Resource Strategy with the Water Resource Department. It was a robust group. We had really, really great discussions, and I think the plan that was adopted by the Water Resource Commission last August is a stepping stone to a more integrated plan. As Steve mentioned in his testimony, all the easy water's gone. The transactions now that we're putting putting together are complicated. They take assurances. They're going to take significant modeling effort at the federal level. We don't have the horsepower to do that locally. We need the federal investment. I want to just speak briefly and not repeat anything that Steve said, but we're going to leverage any state dollar that we get probably 2 to 3 times. The skin in the game that we have is not only local match from the 9 Central Oregon cities, the districts have skin in the game as well as the counties. I think the economic development piece of this ties to that. As you can imagine, if you've been to the Deschutes, having water in those streams or bringing fishermen from all over the world, in addition to some of the best agricultural seed crops in the world as well. So all of us are finishing each other's sentences in this process. We've gotten to know the agricultural needs. We've gotten to know the environmental needs. And I think all of us know that the cities are delivering good drinking water that's also being made into world-class beer and other distilled spirits. So there's lots of good products coming out of the Deschutes. We want to keep those coming. I'll just finish quickly by saying we're collaborating, we're integrating, and we're leveraging the dollars that we're getting. And I think this $750,000 ask from whatever mechanism can work here in Salem is going to really take us to the next level, and we're going to meet all three needs through this process. So thank you again for your time.
Thank you very, very much. Good morning, Doug.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Doug Riggs on behalf of the Central Oregon Cities Organization. We are the 9 cities in Deschutes, Crook, and Jefferson County. We were founded in 1998, and we were founded over water issues. At the time, we had passed a bipartisan bill in 1995 authorizing groundwater mitigation banks, and Senator Neil Bryant began that process. We had to pass the mechanisms to put this system into place in 2001 and 2003 and 2005. It's been a tremendous successful program. You can go back and look at the bipartisan list of your colleagues like Representative Bob Jensen, Representative Jackie Dingfelder. In 2009 and 11, we worked to reauthorize the program for 20 years, so it's in statute for the next 20 years. 17 years, actually, and Representative Jefferson Smith and Senator Chris Edwards helped us on that. So it really has been a great example of bipartisanship. The governor has always been very supportive. I just want to make a couple points. First of all, from the mechanical standpoint, there's a water supply development fund that was requested by the governor of $10 million. It is envisioned in Senate Bill 823, which is moving through Senator Dingfelder's committee. There may or may not be a provision in that bill allowing for this type of a project to occur. We think there will be, but we want 839. Sorry about that. Patrick just corrected me. But this is, we want to make sure that we get something down the Ways and Means from the House and the Senate to make sure this is covered. Just a couple more quick points. Representative McClain mentioned it. I don't think any place else in the state you can look at a collaborative effort like this and see a 4-time increase in river flows in a 10-year period of time. And that's what we've seen in the middle of the Deschutes as a result of this program. It's what happens when people roll up their sleeves, they put their pen in the paper, and they put aside differences, and they sit down. Not to say that discussions have been easy at all times, not to say that there haven't been disagreements in the basin, but there aren't a lot of places where you can see a 4-fold increase in flows. And the middle of the Deschutes has been one of the areas that's been the most water challenged in the entire state. So not the end of the road, but a very good beginning. The last thing I'd say about this bill is in an era where we're trying to make the most of funding, water is both a state and a federal issue. There is a tremendous number of projects and potential funding for large-scale water projects out of Washington, D.C., even in this budget-limited environment that we're seeing in D.C. And so this, once completed, this study will allow the basin to be able to go to Washington, D.C. and apply for larger amounts of money for major projects that will help both the environment and the economy. So I really want to thank the committee. I know your time is limited, available to answer any questions, but really appreciate your time today.
Representative Krieger, please.
The main conversation has been around the middle of the Deschutes because that's where most of the diversions are. Yeah. So will there be a study be looking at other stream flow enhancements in other sections of the river?
Yeah. Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, absolutely yes. We look at this as a whole system, from the Crooked as a tributary to the Metolius as a tributary to all the little sub-tribs from Crescent Creek, the Little Deschutes, Tumalo Creek, Wychus Creek, all of those join together at Lake Billy Chinook and then become the lower Deschutes. And so we look at it as a holistic system. Every single irrigation district that has a diversion on any of those substreams, as well as at the middle Deschutes there, are all looking at that. They're looking at the storage piece. They're looking at about 50% of this 250,000 acre feet coming from transfers and conserved water projects, large-scale conserved water projects. So I think all of that is going to meet these flow targets that we set on a reach-by-reach, stream-by-stream basis. So all of that will be looked at holistically, absolutely.
Okay. Okay. Representative Whitson.
You mentioned that 90% of the water rights are owned by irrigators in the Deschutes Basin, correct? And it's a closed system. When you talk about transfers, are you talking about purchasing ag water or transferring ag water into in-stream for ecological flows?
Chair Witt, Representative Whitsitt, great question. It's a pretty easy answer, and that is when those water rights were issued 100 years ago, they were built with 40% transmission lots. That infrastructure is now 100 years old. As you know, agricultural infrastructure and municipal infrastructure is aging. One of the pieces that will come out of this is a way to sort of hit a lot of birds with one stone, and that essentially is going to help rebuild that aging infrastructure. We've already returned a lot of water in stream through piping and lining, through better measurement, through technology advances on farm. You name it, we've tried it, and we're going to keep trying it. And so we've identified a lot of that water transmission loss that can go to shore up the reliability of the existing ag rights, as well as meet in-stream needs, as well as carve off parts of that to meet the 2% of the municipal needs that we look at for groundwater mitigation. And so we can do all of that.
What is your total acre feet of water in the Deschutes?
Sure. Let me try and answer that, Chair Witt, Representative. What we have is the irrigation districts have been delivering about 700,000 acre feet annually on average, though their water rights are a little bit more than that. They're irrigating about 150,000 acre feet. And remember, I'm the Muni guy. I can give these ag numbers here, and Steve might be able to join in, but that's how much we spend time together. But essentially, we're looking at somewhere around 250,000 acre feet of water that we've identified to meet the three new needs. 70% of that will benefit in-stream. About 30% will shore up existing irrigation demands, as well as meet those out-of-stream needs for cities and other developments in the county areas as well.
Okay.
Thanks. Very good. Vice Chair Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the last 10 years, our Water Resource Department, have they been involved much in this process at all? And if so, have they been a good partner?
Mr. Chairman, Vice Chairman Esquivel, comment on that real quickly, and then I think Patrick might want to jump in. The WRD has been an excellent partner from the very get-go. Director Ward and his staff, Brenda Bateman, have been very responsive. They've worked with us collaboratively. I will say that one of the issues that we have is that I view WRD as being an economic development entity, and if they don't have the staff to be able to dot the I's and cross the T's and approve the water transfers and approve the temporary leases and the things that make our basin system work, then it's hard for us to move ahead with city growth and economic development. So WRD has been a very good partner.
Thank you.
Chair Witt, Representative Esquivel. Great question. We can't do what we do in water without the department. They've been stalwart partners. We want to continue that. I want to tell you, though, honestly, it took me 16 years to get our last groundwater permits. And it wasn't because the department was sitting on their hands hanging out. They have projections of growth of from the state of Oregon, 4 million to 5.5 million people in the next 20, 25 years. Every basin in the state is looking at water supply as the basis for meeting the needs of that growth wherever it's going to occur. So they've been pretty busy. We work with them to leverage our investments and not only our fees, but the way that we leverage federal investment. They've been at the table in the Deschutes Water Alliance. They've been to a lot of our meetings. Phil and Brenda and a lot of their staff spend an enormous amount of time with us working on the details. And they would definitely be at the table, as will OWEB, as will Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, as will the federal agencies. They've been partners as well, as you notice on the masthead, on that letterhead as well. We've got everybody at the table. We're just looking for a little lubricant called $750,000 to kind of keep moving down the road.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That brings some another thought to me. I know the city of Medford will be out of water in, I think, 2050. What about Bend? What's the tip-off year there?
Yeah. Chair Witt, Representative?
And that's drinking water.
Yeah. That's a complicated question because nobody can predict growth. If our trend of microbreweries continues, we might be out of water next week because we've had so many.
If Shopper moves into your district, it will be next week.
Last couple of years. You know, I don't have a better crystal ball than anybody up on the panel today. And so what I can tell you is what we need is certainty so we can put our financing and our rates together. What we need is certainty so we know that we've met our ESA commitments. The districts are working hard with the cities to come up with a habitat conservation plan so we don't get into a Klamath-type crisis situation. We don't think that that's the direction that we would like to go. And so we're trying to be a little proactive and get ahead of that with some good leveraged investment.
Doug, I know you mentioned that a fourfold increase in water flows on the middle of the chutes. Mm-hmm. Something's working and working very well. What are the top things that if we were looking at the efficacy of projects that we undertake to try and increase water flows, what's worked in this instance?
I think I'll let Patrick answer that, Mr. Chairman.
And Steve Johnson may step in here as well if he's still on the phone. But basically what we've done is large-scale conservation programs and projects, piping and lining. The irrigation districts have been champions and leaders in this regard. They've taken that 40% transmission loss that was built into their water rights, and they've essentially been able to conserve water, generate hydroelectricity, which has become an alternate revenue stream to help support the districts as they try to modernize, as well as keep efficiencies. The cities have developed strong conservation programs. The city of Bend was not even metered fully until 2004. So when I was hired in 2000, I didn't even have any water data to really look at. And today we've gotten automated meter infrastructure put in. We're leading probably the state in some of the technology that we're bringing into measurement and management of water. So we're looking at it systemically. We're looking at it holistically. And I think we've really tremendously restored these reaches because of the creativity of our nonprofits that are working in the basin, as well as the districts, as well as our federal partners. So we're all working together as a team there.
I just piggyback off of Representative Krieger's earlier comment. The voluntary and collaborative nature that people have undertaken here, I think, is tremendous. You've obviously found things that work and appear to work very well. I know, Patrick, you mentioned that you know, there's a 20-year planning process at stake here. Imagine, if you will, what it's going to be like 20 years down the road, and I think Representative Esquivel highlighted that many of our cities are challenged by having even adequate drinking water. Mm-hmm. So everything that you're doing is of a critical nature, and very pleased to hear that you're getting ahead of the curve and that you're putting things on the ground or in the water or however. Mm-hmm. That are actually producing very quantifiable results. So, good job.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything, Representative Krieger?
Talking about the clean water and the cities have clean water, and he said he needed some lubricant. You said you're making beer. Beer is pretty good lubricant.
Here we go. All right. And with that, gentlemen, thank you very, very much. Steve, thank you as well.
Thank you, Chair Witt.
So, Chair?
Yes?
Did I just hear Representative Krieger suggest a beer tax for to support this project? Well,
very, very good. Very very quick, too, Representative Reardon. is there anyone else from the public who would like to speak this morning on House Bill 3358? I'm not seeing anyone. And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3358. Next, I'm going to... hold on just a sec. Next, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Joint Resolution 25. Beth, would you remind us what that one is about?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, HJR 25 proposes an amendment to the Oregon Constitution that would prohibit state or local government imposition of fees or taxes on the construction, alteration, abandonment, conversion, or operation of water wells. It refers the proposed amendment to the people for their approval or rejection at the next regular general election.
Thank you. And good morning to our vice chair.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. For the record, Sal Esquivel, represented District 6. Pretty straightforward proposal. The reason this came about is because there is some rumblings out there, and there's some rumblings in the Water Resource Department of maybe putting a charge on people's personal water well out in the rural areas of Oregon. And I guess I wouldn't mind that if the state had come in and drilled the well, they put the pump in, they paid for the electricity, and purified it. I guess I wouldn't have a problem with that. But I do have a problem with it when you go to spend $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 on a well, and only to be taxed for it. So that's what this is all about. It's about a potential head off of an additional way to take monies from people that already have infrastructure in place. That's it, pure and simple.
Very good. Questions for our colleague, Representative Whitsitt.
Not a question, just a comment. Thank you, Sal, for bringing this forward. I think this is a very important issue for the state of Oregon and for the people that live in the rural areas of Oregon and have wells.
Additional questions or comments? Representative Thompson.
Yeah, this is a matter of major concern. I'm already getting emails this session about the plan to meter rural wells. I don't know where the rumor started this time.
Maybe it was me representing.
But we need to put this to bed and decide one way or the other how we're going to go. But I think this is a great bill.
Representative Reardon.
More comment. I just, in general, to be honest, have real concerns about putting things into the Constitution if it can be avoided. And looking at our Constitution, I know it's been done before. But you know, to be honest, it really does tie the hands of future legislators.
Mr. Chair,
water is such a valuable resource, and I'm concerned about our ability to manage that in the future. So. I really have concerns about this.
Mr. Chair, Representative Reardon, this has nothing to do with water flow. This has to do with the taxation on something that you've already paid for in an infrastructure.
I would prefer just to handle that in a different way.
Well, additional questions or comments? Vice Chair Esquivel, thank you very much. And with that, I'm going to call forward, please, Jim Myron, Jerry Schmidt, and Bill Hoyt.
Am I speaking for all those people?
You,
yes,
you are at this point.
It'll make more interesting testimony, I think.
Yeah.
You give Jim's testimony. And
good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jerry Schmidt. I'm here today representing the Oregon Groundwater Association. Wanted to give you some background on this particular issue. Again, as usual, I love to throw in charts so that you can see some visuals about what's involved in the issue of groundwater. I gave you a chart first showing you what the total water use in Oregon is. That's taken from the USGS figures. You can see predominantly most of our water in the state is used from surface water. Groundwater is a small piece of the pie. And then I have another chart that breaks down groundwater users in Oregon, showing you who are the users of this groundwater. You can see, by and large, irrigation is a principal use. Individual domestic is a very small fractional use. And then again, I showed you how the logs that are filed in the department, what actually is. If you look on their website, you can pull up wells that were filed during the year. Predominantly, you can see from that graph that most of the wells are domestic wells. There are abandonments. It's also included in there, some irrigation wells, community wells, dewatering wells, and et cetera. Then I gave you some other graphs showing you what's happening with the industry as a whole. You can see it's drastically reducing. And then finally, in my narrative, I gave you some kind of background on what are the fees that are being charged currently. Start card fees went from 1989, we started out at $75, and that was a dedicated fund to use for well inspections. That fund has funded anywhere from 4 to 6 people. This last year, it was down to 2. The domestic well recording fee, which came in 2009, which is an additional $300 for just domestic wells, exempt domestic wells. So there are still a number of fees that are being charged, and I am aware, as Senator Escobar is, about some of the issues surrounding charging an additional fee for ongoing use of the domestic well. That issue came up during the interim. The Water Resources Department and Commission was trying to fund come up with additional ways to fund the department. They had a $100 fee on every well, including all domestic wells. However, they did assure the group before the legislation was drafted that, in fact, they would remove domestic wells from the additional $100 fee. Conversation came from the governor's office after there was some considerable uprising from the local folks about an additional $100 fee. I have heard reports from people that have looked at some of the legislation. That legislation is up next week in Senate Bill 217. There are some people that argue that the way the language is drafted in the bill, that still subjects some of the people to this fee. So that's my knowledge on the whole situation. I just wanted to give you a brief background that there is a lot of fees already connected with the wells. And as Representative Escobar pointed out, that I've produced a number of different seminars where folks have the mistaken impression that people in the urban area think that rural people are getting by for free and they're not paying for their water. And I did some comparative charts during my presentations and found out that in actuality, the rural people were paying more because, as Senator Escobar explained, that by the time you put the well in at $15,000 and then you put in all the equipment and then the ongoing maintenance, it often goes and you amortize that out over the average home ownership, you end up paying more. So anyway, there's no free rides in this world, and that's basically my report, and I thank you for at least bringing the issue forward so everybody's aware of it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jerry. Appreciate that. Questions or comments from Mr. Schmidt? Representative Krieger.
Maybe a comment. It appears because Oregon's a fee state, we continue to move towards fees to pay for everything, while at the same time, the general public, all of Oregon, that doesn't pay those fees necessarily, get a benefit from the Water Resources Department as a whole. I think we need to keep that in mind, that there's a lot that they do that benefits not just well users or irrigators, but the entire state, fish and wildlife values, all those type of things. And I think there should be a very large component of general fund in that budget to cover those values that everyone does actually get, not just irrigators or well owners.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, I couldn't agree more. Our group has always been very supportive of increased general funds, mainly for the issue that you're pointing out. It is of importance to everyone, whether you're a kayaker, whether you're a fisherman, whatever you are, you're concerned with water. Some of us, like myself, I live on a rural century farm. I have water, rural water. But whether you're a city person or an urban person, it's the same issue and across the board. Thank you.
Representative Whitsitt.
Yeah, I just want to mention, and this is irrigation wells, but it's groundwater nevertheless, that we have several neighbors that are single-family farms down in the Klamath Basin that all of the fees and the electrical pumping charges to get their water up for their crops is exceeding $100,000 in a three-month time period because of everything all added together. And these are these aren't corporate farms. These are single-family farms that are having to pay that. So our water is not free for, you know, people out there who are farming. Or, and I recognize this is specifically domestic wells we're talking about, but it's groundwater nevertheless.
Additional questions or comments? Seeing none, Jerry, thank you very much. Appreciate that. Is there anyone else who would like to testify today on HJR 25? Not seeing anyone, I'm going to close the public hearing on HJR 25. And folks, that brings us to the work session portion of our meeting today. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2025, our bison bill. Beth?
Is that Buffalo Bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
I've just been waiting in the weeds on that one.
There is,
or maybe the plains.
There is a dash to amendment in your packet. The amendment would make a person liable to a landowner for economic damages if that person permits a bison to run at large. It also makes clear that notwithstanding any livestock district petition, it prohibits the owner or possessor of a bison from allowing that bison to run at large. It adds bison to the definition of a stray animal and applies to animals whose presence is discovered on or after the effective date of the act. There's no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact.
Thank you. And committee members, we have a dash two amendment. Have folks had an opportunity to review that?
I looked. I do have a question.
Okay, please.
It talks about allowing a bison or buffalo to run at large. Livestock inherently gets up, gets through the, whether it's a cow or whatever it is. The elk knocked the fences down. My cows are down at my neighbor's. Thank God my neighbor happens to be my brother-in-law, so I was able to go down and get him back. So if some thing of nature knocks the tree down, it knocks the fence down, so the bison gets out, is that bison then going to be considered running at large and have a liability to that landowner?
Mr. Chair, I believe the answer is yes.
Additional questions or comments? I just have a question.
In the dash two amendments, are we adding equines to cattle and part B under section 4.2.2.4? Mm-hmm. Cattle or equines that are found to be trespassing on land enclosed. Are we adding that to it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Whitsitt, yes, I think we are because of the change in that definition, the way it's been split up now. Prior, there was not an A and a B, and it said cattle, equines, continued on. So I think when they added the bison to the sub A, in order to continue the definition and not change it, they added both to the sub B. I don't know if that makes sense.
Okay, so it really isn't
It's not a change with respect to the appliance.
It's not a change. It's just a grammatical.
And we always get stuff. So they always okay. Original bills always move.
Anything further on the dash twos?
Just wanted to comment, if I could, Mr. Chair. The poor Aster experiment station. This is about the fourth session. We've tried to repeal the statutes relating to it, but it always seems to get gotten stuck with something else. And so those can just stay on the books for another session.
Oh, yes.
Justice for the Aster
experiment. Pretty broad.
I love it. One of my carcasses.
Speaking of gutting and stuffing, my neighbor's cattle get out for about the fifth or sixth time. And I got a call one Saturday afternoon to bring my knives over, and I wanted to hang him too because two cattle in one afternoon, I was not prepared for that. So anyways, anyone else? Okay, are we ready to entertain the Dash 2 amendment? That sounds
Mr.
good.
Chair, I kind of am. I have a little bit of a problem about if someone's negligent and they don't get the animal right back in, I can see it. But if it gets out because there was no negligence and something happens, all of these critters are raised in rural Oregon where that is part of the culture. And if you're going to live there, you should expect that once in a while you might end up with a cow in your backyard or somebody's horse going down the road. So I'm not real comfortable that we've made the proper inquiry about all of this. And I haven't seen the cattlemen here or the Farm Bureau or people making statements one way or the other about it. I don't know.
Okay. All right. Very good. Committee members, we're going to stand at ease here momentarily. On the record. And I am going to, I think I was recognizing Representative Whitsitt. Am I correct?
Yes. I'd just like to make a statement. I come from Montana, and we have a ranch adjacent to a large ranch that Ted Turner has purchased, and he's running buffalo, a lot of buffalo, and he spent a lot of money building a massive electrified fence around the edge of this ranch, and yes, when it snows, it shorts out, or if you get buffalo running, and then the first buffalo will take the fence out, and then the rest of the buffalo come through. So we have the occasion to have buffalo despite fences that are in the millions of dollars there. So I'm a little concerned about buffalo are really hard to contain.
I would imagine so.
No matter how much you try. So.
Yes, absolutely.
Mr. Chair, is that where the buffalo roam?
Oh, boy.
I'm on my game today.
All right. Representative Krieger.
I think, Mr. Chair, I'd like to have maybe a day to take a look at the possibility of an amendment that talks about if it isn't from a result of nature,
well, it used to be Springer's,
that causes the containment to not properly operate, that the first offense wouldn't constitute negligence and liability, which would give the person an opportunity to increase the size of the fence, the quality of the fence, to contain those animals. I think that would give make me a little more comfortable. It wasn't the first offense.
More puns here, the first offense.
You know what? I'll be good.
All right. With that, I'm hearing that we have an amendment in the works here that'll make a good bill a better bill. And Representative Krieger, would you be willing to work with Representative Whitsitt to make that happen?
Yeah.
All right. Sounds good. Anyone anything further on Buffalo Bill here?
Oh, it's catching.
Seeing none, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2025. And I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3109. Beth?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3109 was heard earlier this week. It's the bill that would require the director of the Oregon Health Authority to prepare a report on the effects of the 2012 Pole Creek Forest wildfire on public health, fish and wildlife, and aquatic habitat and submit the report to the legislature in 2014. It also specifies that the director and state forester will prepare the report in order to increase public awareness. There's a -3 amendment. There's no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact. And as a result of the minimal fiscal impact, you do have approval to remove the subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee.
All right, very good. And the substance of the -3 was or is?
Mr. Chair, it is an amendment that replaces the measure, and the changes have to do with specifying the purpose of the report being increasing public awareness and adding the state forester to assist the director of the OHA with that report.
Very good. Thank you. Committee members, have you had time to review the -3?
Not really. When did it come out?
It was dated April 9th.
There's a -3 right here. There's something to it.
So,
a couple people.
Representative Reardon, you can take a minute. Other folks need a minute to review this one.
Good.
Folks are good. We'll just hang tight here for a second.
I think it's fine.
Off the record.
I'm good.
Okay, we are back on the record. And we are considering the -3 amendment to House Bill 3109. Folks have had a chance to review it. Questions or comments about that -3 amendment? I'm not seeing anything. Are we ready to work the bill? All right. I will recognize Representative Krieger, please.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the Dash 3 amendments into House Bill 3109.
Thank you very much. Representative Krieger moves the Dash 3 amendments into House Bill 3109. Discussion on his motion. I'm not seeing any. Is there any objection to that motion? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Krieger again, please.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 3109 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Thank you. Representative Krieger moves House Bill 3109 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Discussion on his motion. I'm not seeing any. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Clem.
Aye.
Representative Krieger.
Aye.
Representative Reardon.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Unger.
Aye.
Representative Whitsett.
Aye.
Vice Chair Esbell.
Aye.
Vice Chair McEwen.
Excused.
Chair Witt.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes, and the bill is sent as amended to the floor. Now, let's see here. We're going to need a carrier.
Representative Wisnett presented the bill, didn't he?
He's from Van Letting Curry.
Okay, that's a very good idea. Very, very good idea. Thank you,
Bill.
Thank you. We'll ask Representative Wisnett if he'd be willing to do that. And with that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3109. And I am going to open a work session on House Bill 3441. And colleagues, with this point in the session, things have been happening fast and furious. Just-in-time action here. We have a approval to remove the subsequent referral of the Hatchery Research Center bill, its referral to Joint Ways and Means. So we can consider that here. With that, Beth.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3441 is the bill that would establish the Oregon Hatchery Research Center Board and specify its members and membership and duties. There is a Dash 3 amendment in front of you, and Joe Rolater has submitted some testimony describing that amendment, and I believe is available to talk about it if you would like. As the Chair just referenced, there's a minimal fiscal impact, and as a result, there's okay to remove the subsequent referral.
Very good. Would folks like to hear from Mr. Rolater?
I would.
Joe, would you be willing to come forward?
Yes, sir.
And you're addressing the Dash 3 amendment, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. Welcome. Thanks for making yourself available.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this bill has been through three different legislative drafts.
Joe, would you introduce yourself, please?
I'm sorry. Joe Rolater. I represent the Oregon Salmon Commission here today and the ALC Sportsmen's Association. This bill's been through a lot of different iterations. We think we've got it right for the Dash 3 amendments. There's a large, long number list of people that support this. A somewhat eclectic group. The Dash 3 amendments, first of all, the Dash 3 amendment removes the reference to the Oregon Hatchery Research Fund, which was the hang-up with fiscal. It turns out we can do everything that we need to do with the Hatchery Research Center without having that particular kind of fund, and so we removed it. The Section 1 of the Dash 3 amendment adds the Gillnetters to the group. They were left out in the beginning, and they should have been included in a group of interested people in this area. Section 3 better defines the duties of the board. It also adds a reference to ORS 496-275, which states in part, the Legislative Assembly hereby declares it necessary to review all options and means for protection and restoration of Oregon's salmon resources that promote local economies and local economic development and enjoyment by all of its citizens. If we wrote that today, we'd probably also say to help Oregon meet its federal ESA requirements. Section 5 of the -3 amendment removes the word pure as a description of wild brood stock, and we felt that was a redundant statement. Section 7 adds the chair of the OSU Fisheries and Wildlife Department to the selection process for the senior scientist or the director of the center. And Section 8 is amended so that the Department of Fish and Wildlife and OSU must renegotiate their MOU based on the direction in this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Discussion on this, and there may be questions of Mr. Rollator, I don't know. But committee members, anyone at this point? Representative Krieger, please.
Mr. Chair, this has been a 4 or 5 month process getting this bill down here. And I did want to thank Jim Myron and Tom Wolf to come forward and help us. And when you made reference a few minutes ago, Joe, to 496-275, there's a word in there. That's native fish, and the need for the state to understand their value and protect them. I feel strongly that the research that this hatchery can actually accomplish will have that effect long term, and we need to have some oversight and get the research directed in that direction. And I think we're well on our way to getting that done. I did meet with the governor yesterday, I guess it was, and I'm pretty confident that he's going to support and understands why we're doing this. So we'll see. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I consider this to be the second most important salmon steelhead issue right after cormorants for increasing our production and the health of our fisheries in Oregon. So thank you very much, sir.
Well, thank you, Joe. And thank you to you and everyone else who worked on this amendment. This is a good bill, and it is improved with the -3 amendments and the help and cooperation of a lot of folks. And it always takes that coordination and leadership, and appreciate you you heading that up along with Representative Krieger. So thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Anything further? Are we ready to? Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Are we ready to consider the -3 amendment?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm going to recognize Representative Krieger.
Chair, I'd like to move to adopt the -3 amendments, dated 4-5, 2012, into House Bill.
Thank you. And that was 2013, Representative Krieger?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Representative Krieger moves to adopt the -3 amendment dated April 5th, 2013, into House Bill 3441. Discussion on his motion. Seeing none, is there any objection to his motion? Seeing none, hearing none, so ordered. Again, Representative Krieger, please.
Yeah, Chair, what I move House Bill 3441 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means be rescinded.
Thank you. Representative Krieger moves House Bill 3441 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Discussion on this motion. Yes, Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am just worried with only 37 co-sponsors, this may not make it. Did we get them all signed up before we get there?
Had Senator Roblin not been absent, becoming a grandfather, he'd have picked up probably another 10 to 15 Senate members.
My goodness. Wow.
Well, yeah, only House co-sponsors. Only 37 House co-sponsors.
Yeah, that's just House, but I think everyone on the committee is on that.
I think that's accurate. Further discussion? Seeing none, Maria, would you please call the roll?
Representative Klum?
Aye. Sorry.
Yes.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Reardon?
Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Aye.
Representative Unger?
Aye.
Representative Whitfitt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Esquivel?
Aye.
Vice Chair McKeeling?
Excused?
Chair Witt?
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes and the bill is sent as amended to the floor. And with that, that completes our schedule of business this morning. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3441. Committee members, is there anything for the good of the order?
Who do you want to carry the bill?
Oh,
boy, who? Boy.
And thank you, Representative. I'm going to reopen very briefly the work session on House Bill 3441. And I would like to have Representative Krieger carry this bill.
I'd like to have, as a co-carrier, the chair of the committee. You're also a chief sponsor. You've helped to get through. I'd like to have both of us carry.
I would be honored to do that, Representative Krieger. Thank you. With that, I'm going to close for the second time the work session on House Bill 3441. Committee members, anything for the good of the order?
You should have held out for the Buffalo Bill.
My carcass.
I'm not seeing anything. Committee members, very good work today, and appreciate those of you who will be working on amendments for other bills. With that, we are adjourned. Yeah.